Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, guys, as the official clearinghouse of all DFS site-related drama, we have another story to tell today. This is the unraveling of Daily Fantasy Insider. J-Mac reached out to us recently and wanted to tell us about what happened with him, some of his early founders, developers, and the unraveling of the site, and now why he's launching a new venture. There's all kinds of interesting wrinkles to this story, so we are going to try to get to the bottom of it. The best way Brian and I know how as DFS investigative journalists. Let's do it.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Justin, I was about to say that this is your first time on Lulz, but it's not, right? Weren't you? Didn't you
it's
come
not.
On?
Yeah,
like
I don't
the
think
Empire
there was
Maker?
Much substance in the last time I was on, but we had a good time.
What was the occasion for that?
I don't know. I want to say a live final, but I also don't want to be wrong. I don't know. it was like over two years ago.
I thought it was when Empire Maker and Awesomo were battling there. And I feel like you had like thoughts in or you had like tossed your name in like a high stakes battle.
Yeah. Oh man, I miss Empire Maker. I haven't seen him around in a while. Yeah, that could be what it was. I used to battle with Empire in head to heads, and I think maybe he picked it up with Awesomo. So I maybe came on to share what it's like to battle with him.
That could have been it.
I can't remember.
It's crazy that we've been doing this show so long that we can't even like remember specific episodes and things we talked about. But Justin, most people know you from Daily Fantasy Insider, the infamous War Rooms. I believe you specifically got on my radar during COVID when we started the show. You guys were doing a lot of League of Legends and esports content. Of course, Brian and I established ourselves as thought leaders in the space at the time, but set the stage for us a little bit here. That company, you were there for what, 8 years previously?
Yeah. So I started that company, kind of started conceptualizing when I was 18 years old, launched it when I was 19. I was at UNC Chapel Hill, launched it with my roommate. And the reason for launching it was that everybody at school was texting me asking who I was playing on FanDuel every day. So I started a Twitter account and said, everyone, don't text me, please. Just follow this account. I'll put my picks on there. And then a bunch of random people started following the account. So I was like, all right, I'm going to make this into a real website. And I got connected to a family friend who had some basic concept of how to build websites. He built the site for us. And I kind of just tossed around the equity. Like before we even had a business plan at all or any sort of monetization plan, I was barely over 50% owner, had given out the rest to friends and people that wanted to work on it. And so that's the kind of the first thing, the first big mistake that I think a lot of young business owners make is they want to not go at it alone. And what they really need is mentors and advisors. And rather than finding mentors and advisors, I found equity partners. And that's what kind of creates 8 years later, it's like, wow, this situation has become really unfair because those people worked at the company for like a couple years, put in a little sweat equity, and then kind of went off to do their own things when we graduated. And so now there's these little partners out there that, and all but one of them told me, go do whatever you want with this. Like if you want to close it down and start your own thing, I don't mind at all. Totally understand because they're not doing anything. The whole thing has just been me. The only partner that is frustrated about this is the tech partner. And the reason that I had to leave this guy is because it just became clear that he was ripping us off. And I think what I've learned is that the big mistakes, I'm going to talk about a few different mistakes that I've made and maybe why there's some rumors floating about me that based on mistakes. And it's really almost always comes down to kind of trusting people a little too much. And I think that's a natural thing when you're young and starting a business, you think, okay, I can't wear all the hats. I can't do everything. And a lot of people tell you that you should really specialize. Like you should really nail the thing you're good at and let other people handle the other things you're not good at. So I thought, I'm going to let this guy be our CTO, manage all the tech. And I just trusted that it was kind of being priced out fairly. And when we looked into selling the company late last year, early this year, when people dug through our books, the feedback I kept getting was, you've been getting ripped off really bad on your tech. And so that really changed the whole thing for me of like, wow, okay, I kind of suspected it, but I didn't know enough about tech to say. You know, they'd send me a spreadsheet of all the hours that were logged and for what, and it was all this jargon that I didn't understand. So how am I supposed to dispute that it shouldn't take that long? And so it was only when kind of we really got the business valued that they said, this situation's not right. And once that was kind of out in the open, the tech team restricted my access to the website. I can't even update a plugin on the website since January. So their way of kind of making sure that they didn't get booted out was to make it impossible for me to take over the tech. So I tried to hire a new tech team. Other owners in this industry are really friendly. I think people think we're all rivals, but I've never talked to another owner of a DFS content site that wasn't willing to talk to me and help me and really friendly. I think everybody kind of respects entrepreneurship. If you've never owned a business and launched a business, it's harder than you think it's going to be. So I think everybody that owns them in the space is really nice to each other. They gave me some helpful advice. One guy even connected me to his tech team, which was really nice of him. And I tried to hire this new tech team to run DFI. And my current tech team just refused to cooperate. They said, no, we've been here forever. They don't know how it works. That they're gonna tank the equity that we have. We're not willing to do it. And they just kind of reached a stalemate where a few months back, I told them, I said, look, I'm going to just close the company down. I'm the majority owner. Our operating agreement is rock solid. Like our attorney looked at it and said, like, one of the strongest operating agreements I've ever seen that keeps the majority owner in just complete control. And that was the way we set it up on purpose. I said, look, I'm willing to give this equity away. I want you guys on board, but I need to have total control of this company because it's really me. You know, you guys are going to help, but it's mostly my brand. So luckily it was set up that way. So I told him, I said, look, I have control to just close the company down and start a new one. I'll give you like 20 grand to go away. And he came back with like 10 times higher than that as the asking price. And he's like, let's negotiate from there. And I said, I'm not even going to start at that. I'm not even going to negotiate. I'm not even going to come to the table if you want to start at this outrageous price to get rid of a 15% owner who is just holding on to the tech. And so the two options really at that point were walk away, start over, or sue him and win. But it would just be a pain in the ass. And like, this is the whole thing is mostly to have fun. You know, this isn't the most lucrative industry. I think people think there's so much money to be made in these companies. Like, not that good. You know, it's mostly about having fun. It's not worth dragging out a lawsuit and bringing everybody into court and spending money on attorneys to fight for this tech that honestly is 8 years old. Like, yeah, we've been building on top of it, but it's still built on a foundation that's 8 years old. And so when I started over, my wife has experience building a website. She built her own jewelry company that she launched last year. And so we were looking into it and she's like, I think for all the features you actually need, we could easily build this ourselves. And so that's what we did. And I told the tech partners that I was going to do it. And they said, we don't believe you. You're bluffing. You'll never be able to do it. You don't know how to build a website. So they were disappointed when I told them that I had successfully built a website. But I think the thing that I think is a testament to me, I saw somebody in the comments say, who cares about just having JMAC on if you're not going to have the other disgruntled partners come on? And I think it speaks that no one is out there saying I did anything wrong. Like all the employees pretty much came with me to the new company. The only people who left had been there for long enough. They've got kids now and they just said, hey, I think I'm ready to retire, which was totally cool. But we don't have any like disgruntled, angry people out there saying that we did anything wrong. It was just that our tech just basically got hijacked and we were just being kind of held hostage from our own platform. They were trying to force us to buy them out at an insane price. So it just made sense to start over. I don't think the DFI brand name and the War Room brand name, I don't think it's worth all that much. I think what really matters in the space is just community and good content. And so I think if we just make good content at really good picks, I think most of the people will translate over. And that's kind of already been the case. We've already had a few hundred of our most loyal DFI people have already come over to RGP and they're loving it. So I think it's a good, fresh change for all of us. And I'm relieved to now be in control of the tech and hopefully that can't happen to me again.
All right, lots to unpack there. I have some follow-up questions. Brian, anything that you have on your mind here?
Yeah, I mean, just real quick, the when you gave them equity, is that also like a rev share? So like
no, so
just if you sell the company.
But the tech guy insisted that he needed a salary that was even higher than my own. And he claimed he was really doing high level stuff. And I just had no way of disputing it. And so I brought somebody in at one point to take a look, but they just said I'd have to get so deep into it that he would really know that I was auditing it. And like, do you want to damage the relationship to do that? And I should have, but I said no. And I think one of the big mistakes that I made was thinking that business experience is worth a lot. And what I mean is this tech partner was the only person in our company who was over 40 years old. The rest of us were like 20. And he'd run businesses before. And so I think I believed that his experience in business was worth more than my knowledge of the niche. And I should have just said, no, I'm in charge here. But it's hard when you're the youngest person in the room. It's hard to be bossing around 40-year-old and his tech team. So I just kind of let myself get pushed around a little bit. And that's kind of my big regret. But I think it's something that I had to experience to learn from.
So what was the exact equity split? Were you the majority owner?
Yeah. So I, at the time of closing, I had 56% of the company. This guy had 15, another couple people had 10. And those people were just like passive. Another guy had 2, like none of them were making any demands. They all said, it's fair. If you just close us down and start over, like we don't do anything. And no one ever invested any money in the company. I think that's another factor that I saw people in the comments saying on Twitter, like, oh, I heard he screwed all the investors. He raised all this money and then bailed and screwed them. And I was just like, that's not true at all. Like these people were just given equity for free to help me out as friends. They haven't been working on the business for 5+ years. Like it's not a situation where I would never go fundraise money and then close the business down. I feel like that's like kind of almost rude to even imply that that would be something I would do. But yeah, I was like, nobody lost anything other than potential upside in the future. But we built this business model the wrong way. And it was built for the idea of scaling revenue and user count and then selling the business. And in 2020, we actually got an offer in the 7 figures based on revenue and user count. And the guy who made the offer, quite frankly, said, honestly, if I were you, I would really ramp up the top line stuff. I would ramp up the revenue and the user count, come back to us. We'll make you a better offer in a couple of years. So we go down that road and then the whole market flips. And then we go to him in January of this year. And he says, yeah, we've really changed the way we're doing it. It's really all about EBITDA now, which makes a lot of sense. Like I was surprised how much businesses were being valued in Silicon Valley, in our industry, all over, based on top line metrics. And these companies lose $100 million a year. Like I didn't understand how Monkey Knife Fight got bought. Like it made no sense to me. They've already closed it down. And I thought, okay, do I trust my own instincts, which is this seems a little off to value everything like this? Or do I trust these people who are the people actually making the offers and experienced in the industry? And I can't even say I regret that choice to trust them. I think it makes sense to trust the people that are experienced in the industry. And it just didn't work out. But I think in business, a lot of it is just kind of luck and timing. And like you look at guys like Rockefeller and Vanderbilt, like people now think they're really great success stories, but they broke a ton of laws and took a ton of really bad risks. Like I think the process was bad, but the result was good. And I kind of think business is just a lot like that. Like some people are breaking laws and they turn into Madoff, and some people break laws and they turn into Vanderbilt, and you don't know which one you're going to be until it's over. And so I think in this case, like I chose to follow the path that was working for the companies in the space. But the market has really flipped on its head. And so you're seeing a lot of companies change course right now. And so DFI was just too hard because the tech was costing so much. That app was really expensive to run, and it just made sense to drop the app and just start all over, really.
So what laws were you breaking?
No, I wasn't breaking any. I was just saying in general, like you just think about
it. If that's your business motto, though, I don't know if that's a good thing to publicly say, because
to what?
If that's your business model.
No,
or, not at all. Or MO.
Just clarifying, yeah, that I was not breaking any laws. I was just saying that
you break laws and sometimes it works out.
Yeah, no,
Everyone was getting a salary. There was no like rev share split from the month. Now, was there a a bunch of money left over that you had to split with people? Like, it's hard to allocate money when
that's what made it easy to close down, is that there was actually the tech guys were kind of claiming, this is what really broke up the relationship, what really fractured the whole relationship with them. It was already not going great last year, but I was kind of powering through and really burning out. I was losing a lot of enthusiasm for the whole thing, and I just didn't know what to do. And so actually looking into selling the company is what really severed the relationship, because when they thought that we were going to get we actually got an offer. We signed an LOI earlier this year, and we can get into that more. But when we were about to get that offer, they all of a sudden presented a ton of expenses that didn't exist before. And they were like backlogged tech expenses. And I think they thought, oh, a big check is about to come in and we want to take way more than our 15% equity split that we would be entitled to. So we're going to claim there's been all these expenses that we hadn't logged yet from the prior year. And so all of a sudden it was like, well, wait a second. If we sell this now, you guys are going to get half of the money. That doesn't even make any sense. And so once they put that on the books and then the deal fell through, now it's like, it's so awkward if they try to backtrack and say, well, never mind, I guess you don't owe us all that. So it just became irreparable. And I think they knew it. We knew it. There's barely been any communication for the last 12 months. They haven't updated any, like our WordPress is out of date. They won't update it. They restricted my account, so I can't update it. So just the whole thing just kind of fell apart. And I think it's just kind of clear on both sides, like, this isn't going to work. So, and that deal created a few different issues, but I'm still glad it happened, because that's what really led to me realizing, like, okay, I'm the value of the company. I should leave and start over. These guys aren't adding any value. They're actually subtracting a lot of value by overcharging for all their services. So I've been thinking like they were providing value with tech. I provide value with content. And so that flipped the whole equation on its head for me to realize that I really don't need them at all.
What percentage of the content were you doing at DFI? Because I know you had a bunch of contributors. Like, how many other people did you have that weren't tech but were actually providing content?
Yeah, so I think we had about 40 people at DFI that are providing content.
Wow.
I'd say about 10 of them retired in this transition. About 5 of them were just let go. And we brought about 25 over to Really Good Picks. And I'm going to be providing a lot more content at Really Good Picks. So even this 25 will probably end up having less work. But I think they'll enjoy it a lot more. The war rooms required a lot of kind of tedious labor from our team. We had to list out all the players that were viable on the slate. And that takes a lot of time and it's not fun at all. So by releasing my projections on Really Good Picks, now you can look up any player and see what we think about them, both ownership and their actual projection, which means our team doesn't have to just list out all the viable plays, tell you who's bad chalk. Like, you can just discern that from the projections. And then we're doing a slate breakdown write-up that's just everything we think you need to know about the slate. The way I've been describing it to my team is, this is a blank canvas. There's no templates. Let's throw out all the templates. No one likes templated content. Just whatever you want to write about for that slate, whatever seems the most relevant, that's what you should be writing about. And then in the customers in the Discord ask follow-up questions and you realize you left something out, you can go edit the article. But let's just write whatever we want to write. And we're only a couple of days in. It happens that we crushed the All-Star game. So everybody's feedback so far is, this is great. I love this format. We'll see what they think of it after we bust a couple of slates. But I think overall it's going to be a lot better and it'll take a lot less tedious work from our team. It'll be more like thought-provoking and fun writing.
So one, you mentioned the stuff like that. It does seem like at the end of the day, like a DFS site and you're specifically, the tech isn't super important. It is the content and the community. Like, what's the follow-up? Because I assume most of the community is taking place, what, in Discord? You have an email list, I assume. Like, yeah. Who has control over those things? Because that's by far the most valuable thing you have. Like, if they take an app and you're like, who cares? Like, I'll create another site or whatever. But like, how is this falling out with the community?
Yeah. And what we realized when we were looking at selling the company is that they were valuing my Twitter account way more than they were valuing the email list or even the current subscriptions. Everybody wanted to own my Twitter and own me personally. They wanted me to be signed on for 3 years to make content and promote whatever the new site was going to be. Every deal we looked at, same thing. They had to get me in my Twitter account. And I realized that if I took one of these deals, I'm going to be splitting what's really supposed to be my salary, and things that should really be going to me are just going to be split up among all the partners. So it kind of made all these deals untenable in that way. I was still going to be willing to do the one that we agreed to because I liked the people we were doing it with. It's a company in the space that I'm friends with the guys, and I liked the deal, but it just fell apart. They ended up going through something drastic that changed their company. It dragged out the due diligence process for like 2 months. And by the end of that, I was kind of ready to just be done with the whole thing. And then they were kind of done too. It changed their business dynamics too much. It kind of all fell apart. But all those deals were kind of the same in that they all made it clear to me that the value is actually my Twitter. And you can kind of see it from me posting my Twitter thread. It got a couple hundred thousand views, and pretty much every customer has come over to the new site. So I don't actually think DFI had any asset value. I think it's pretty much all just where our team is, and our team has switched over to really good picks.
Isn't that kind of like irrelevant? Like, I don't know, like I'm not a lawyer, but like if I made a deal with somebody and it's like, well, it turns out I shouldn't have made that deal. I'm the guy who's benefiting from all this. So I'm just going to boogie on out of here. Isn't that like, well, so you signed the deal, you owe these guys this equity.
Right. No. And they're welcome to keep their equity. I'm just leaving, you know, like that's kind of, it's like, you can keep your equity in DFI. You can keep the app. You can have the assets. Like I don't really care. I'm just leaving. And, you know, I talked about it with the guy and he begrudgingly agreed that if I leave and all the team leaves, then we should definitely cancel all the subscriptions. It wouldn't be right to keep charging people when there's not going to be any content. So I told him if he wants to go hire new people, he can, but he doesn't want to. I mean, he was really just riding my coattails, ripping me off. And he knows that. And he has no interest in, he doesn't really know anything about the industry. I mean, every April he asked me, hey, why are the golf sales up? Like it's been 8 years. The guy doesn't know that the Masters is in April. Like he really doesn't know the industry at all.
But he was getting a salary off you, right? He was getting a salary off you?
He was taking a salary and he was billing me for his team's hours. So we were paying them in a pretty
egregious. Why would he rock the boat there?
He wasn't trying to rock the boat. Yeah. He wasn't trying to rock the boat. It got rocked when he thought when we agreed in principle to sell the company, he thought, all right, this is it. This is my last cash grab. So that's why they threw all this extra stuff on the books trying to, and I think he could already sense, like I was already kind of asking for more details about some of the expenses and I was asking for him to like kind of audit the work a little more, and he was dragging his feet on that. So I think he could sense that I was rocking the boat and hey, let me make one more shot at grabbing some cash as we sell this company. Cause he knew he would be replaced. I mean, that was something very clear in the deal, was that the new company that was acquiring us, their tech team was going to take over the whole thing. They didn't want to bring anybody from our tech team.
You were describing like he wasn't doing anything and riding your coattails and everything. It seems like, you know, logically, why push it? Why not just eat, you know, get the free money for as long as you can? If the company sells, the company sells. That's a free 15%. All this is just free. Why get greedy and rock the boat? And like some of this too, it seems like, why were you trying to sell? Like when was the first, like when did
right.
you first
yes. so trying to sell questions. The company? Yeah, so my reason I wanted to sell was because I was just getting so burned out. And this working with this guy was burning me out. And I hadn't actually considered that I could just walk away. That didn't seem like a reasonable option because the company had value. So I thought, well, it makes sense to sell the company. And then that will allow me to go to some new place, work for them for a few years and just, you know, I'll get paid a salary at the new company. So it'll still be a decent gig. I never really considered the option of just making a new company until my business attorney looked at our operating agreement and said, your best option is to just walk away from this. Like you don't need to, because I reached out to him about, can I sue to get control of the tech and so we can switch tech teams? Because I'm trying to fire these guys and they're not letting me fire them because they have control of the code. They own the code. Like, I don't personally have possession of the app code or the website code. So what am I supposed to do? And so I thought I was going to have to sue him. And this guy looked at it and said, yeah, you could sue him and it would drag on and you'd eventually win, but you'd probably lose a lot of customers in the process because it would take up all your time. You wouldn't be focused on the content and they'd probably go to other companies and it's just not worth doing. Dude, you just start over. And I hadn't really considered that. And then once I thought it through, I realized, yeah, that is the best way to get rid of these guys, is to just start all over. And I'm really, so far, I'm really glad I did. I mean, I think it's a lot better.
So one of the commenters in on Twitter sent a post of you asking someone who owned really good picks or whatever Twitter handle in 2020 to DM you, which would, one would think that you would do that because you want his handle so you could.
Right. No, I think it's important to clarify.
This hasn't occurred to you. Why would you send that to over 2 years ago?
No, I think it's important to clarify that my tweet is from 5/6/2023.
Oh, okay. Good point. All right. Fair enough.
So that was their last tweet. And I thought, you know, what are the odds? This is really unlikely they're going to respond, but I might as well. I mean, they're clearly not in existence anymore. The URL is available, so I'm going to take it regardless. But I might as well ask if I can have the Twitter account and pay him $100. If you're watching this, I mean, reach out. I don't really care that much, but I'll buy it for you from a little bit.
He actually sent me a message. He wants 15% equity for the screen name.
Have you thought about changing the S to a Z, J-Mac, or maybe beating him over to Threads? Those might be a couple alternatives.
Yeah. What's your take on Threads? I don't want to get too sidetracked, but is it worth doing?
Brian and I talked about this all last episode. We can't get sidetracked. No, let's stay on track here. So what's the new setup with the company? Because I assume your best demographic for new subs is your old DFI subs. They clearly were already on board with what you're doing. They don't have the app anymore. Like, what is the sub price the same? Was it just directly transferable? Like, how are you porting people over to the new site?
Yeah. So my partner said, you've got to email everybody and tell them that the company's closing down, and it's on you to mitigate refunds. So I said to my attorney, does that give me the right to just contact all the users and invite them to my new platform? And he said, absolutely. That's explicitly what he's telling you to do. So I emailed all the current customers and said, you know, here's a coupon code for the remaining amount of membership you have at DFI. You can come over to Really Good Picks and get free access for whatever you had left. And so if anybody didn't get that email and feels like they should, please reach out to me. I want to make sure everybody gets taken care of. We haven't had a single person put in a refund or a chargeback at DFI. We have a nice community of people. Everybody's on board to come over to the new company. I think my tech partner, I think he's really just kind of resigned to the fact that he kind of screwed this up. And I think he's just kind of going to walk away. And there's nobody out there that's like complaining, you know? I mean, I think that should say something, right? Like that clearly I'm not super in the wrong here if there's nobody that's even complaining or saying I did anything wrong. So that's where we're getting most of our users from right now, is just bringing them all over
Let me say this, J-Mac. Your point about no one's coming out of the woodworks, no one DM me or Pete, to my knowledge, from like your tech team or anything like that. You are a polarizing character on Twitter, based on the messages I received. But like, basically, no one provided any receipts on anything.
Right. Yeah. And so let's address. We still have half an hour, right? So let's run through some of these things. I try not to engage on Twitter on just negative things, because early in the first few years of doing this, if someone threw out something that wasn't true about me, I would really debate it until I felt like I'd kind of adjudicated myself, and then it just becomes the next thing, right? And so I was like, this isn't really accomplishing anything. It's just kind of just drags me into negativity. And I really like to try to be positive. I mean, I don't try to tear anybody else down on Twitter. So I just try to block these people and just not engage. But I do think at some point these things have to be addressed. Otherwise, people think silence means that it's true, right? So I think that's one thing I was looking forward to in coming on the show, is like, let me be an open book for half an hour, just fire these rumors at me. I'll tell you where I believe they've come from, the mistakes that I did make that are fair to call me out for. And then let's just put it to bed.
Well, yeah, we have a few like loose ends and stuff that, you know, came through. Brian, what do you got?
Just to recap really quickly, so we're all on the same page. So essentially you gave equity to a guy, and also he ran your tech, which is a big problem, because as everyone knows, if you don't have control of your own tech, they could screw you. They could lock you out of your RPS account, for example. You know, and in there, that frustrated you for quite a while. You decided I had an epiphany moment. I could just walk away and start a new company. You did that. This guy has not said anything to us or anyone else. It seems like at this moment, you're not going to get sued. He's just going to eat it. DFI is completely gone and you're starting this new company and you did all this grassroots, like you didn't take anything from them, that a former company. Pretty cut and dry, Pete. Anything I'm missing?
I think that that leads us up to like the backstory of how we got there. Let's start out with some of the random comments we got on Twitter. It sounds like you're already well aware of these. You know, one thing someone said about the new site is some old subs said they thought they were locked into a DFI price for life. And now that price is actually doubled over at Really Good Picks. What's up with that situation?
Yeah. So the complication of the back end of DFI is partly what prevented me from even being able to understand it. We had at least 200 different subscriptions in the back end. And that was because we changed our prices a few times over 8 years. We had daily products, weekly products, monthly products, annual products across 10 different sports, all these different bundle packages, because every time somebody asked for something, I accommodated. Every time someone said, can you make a golf and NFL bundle? I was like, yeah. So it just became this really messy web of stuff that we asked our tech guys last summer. We said, we really need Discord. We need the premium members to be able to have a private Discord where they can talk about their lineups before the lock. And for 8 months, our tech team was billing us for working on it and never got it done. And just kept saying the back end.
I could have made that for you in 30 minutes, J-Mac. I could have done that for you in 30 minutes and charged it.
Right. And I reached out to people at other companies, Run Pure, Awesome. I asked them, how do you have the Discord? They said, it's really simple. So I kept telling my tech team that, and they just kept saying, they don't understand how complicated our back end is because of how many subscriptions we have. And so I said, look, that might be true, but I don't want to deal with this anymore. This is terrible. So at the new company, I have just like 9 products. They're monthly memberships, and I'm not going to be honoring 5-year-old prices at DFI because then I have to make more edits to the back end and more subscriptions. And look, honestly, I think the prices are really fair. It's $49 a month for every single sport, projections, slate breakdowns, and Discord. I don't think there's a site out there that's offering projections for every slate, including like golf showdowns, NFL showdowns, NBA showdowns, downloadable CSV projections that you can upload into an optimizer. I mean, I think it's a lot of content for $49 a month. So I definitely understand there's going to be some people, whatever you were once paying, it sucks to pay more. This is a different product though. Like if it makes you feel any better to pay a little more, you weren't getting projections and you weren't getting a Discord. So you're getting a lot more content than you were before. I think it's a much better product. But yeah, I'm going to have to just stand by these prices. I don't plan on ever raising them. I'm just going to leave it this way, not touch the back end. Right now, my wife and I can manage it between the two of us. And if I start messing with it again, the last thing I want is to have to hire on a developer. It's just too much PTSD for me there.
Okay. So prices are more, but it's because of like complications and the sub setup being different at the new place.
Yeah. And just what I think is fair. I mean, looking at the market, I think we're way below other companies that are offering similar content packages. So I don't think it's unreasonable to stand by $49 a month for projections for every sport and content.
Another question that keeps coming up, and Brian and I saw this in multiple spots, is asking about your own personal DFS play, because obviously there's this whole concept of why tout in the first place if you're not winning the game. And then there's a lot of people specifically saying you're not playing at all and that you've actually self-excluded on DraftKings. Is that true?
Yeah. So the human cesspitus is no more. And I've been waiting to make this announcement for a while because I just kept thinking, surely someone reasonable at DraftKings would contact me and say, hey, our player safety team went way too far. Sorry about that. And give me my account back. But that has not happened. So at this point, I'm ready to come forward and declare it dead. So what happened is when football ended, I got a new VIP rep at DraftKings. I had been really close with my past one. And I got a new text from him saying, hey, let me know if you need anything. And I said, hey, man, kind of rough timing for you that you just got me as one of your players. Because my understanding is that part of their compensation is that the players that they have on their roster, their volume is somehow impacts their compensation. So their job is to try to get you to play more, right? So I said, hey, not great timing for you. I just decided with my wife that I'm going to scale down the high stakes Thunderdomes, scale down the high stakes play, because I realized that I'm living the life of someone with a really stressful job. And there's just no reason for that. Like I shouldn't be this stressed out about my work when I have a really good life. And this should be a fun industry. And also it's distracting me from the content that the users really care about. You know, I'm spending so much time researching high stakes ownership that it's actually kind of influencing my content a little bit. Like I might know that Doug Gim is a really good play this week in low stakes, but I don't want to make him the must have because in high stakes, he's going to be really chalky because of his odds. And so I might pivot the pick away. And so just on some self-reflection, I realized that the reason I started playing these high stakes contests was because I thought that it would be really effective marketing. I thought, you know, I can tweet this, the screenshots, and it'll to your point, Pete, it'll show people that I am playing my own picks and that I am a winning player. But I actually think what it did is make me so unrelatable that it makes people think this guy isn't making the content for me. Like I had people reach out and say, do you make picks for the Millie Maker, for the big contest, or are you really just focusing on super small fields? And I realized, like, first of all, winning a 10-man contest, it's not that impressive. You know, like you could do it every 12 days, even if you suck. So it's not really worth posting these screenshots all the time. So long story short, I reached out to my rep and I said, look, I'm probably going to scale down and I'm going to take a little break. I just had the most tilting run ever in NFL. I just had like five slates in a row where my guys got hurt. I'm going to take a little mental health break for a couple of weeks and then I'm going to come back and I'm probably going to play lighter. And he said, all right, thanks for letting me know. Just so you know, if somebody mentions mental health, I do have to pass that along to our player safety team. So I'm just letting you know that I've passed that along. So I said,
why would you feel the need that you have to tell your rep that in the first place? Like any of us can stop playing without having to tell our draft.
Right. The reason is because I was so close to my pass rep and I knew from talking to him that he really appreciated how much volume I played because that impacted him and his role. And I just, you know, this is another example of just kind of going, there's just oversharing, right? Like I didn't need to tell him this, but I thought that it would be courteous to let him know that I'm not going to be the top draft pick or whatever in their reassignment of players. And so I just thought it makes sense to just let him know that. Obviously it did not, right? Like in hindsight, very bad choice, but it seemed like it made sense. So the player safety team reached out and said, yeah, we've had to suspend your account. If a player says that it's negatively impacting your mental health to play, then we have to suspend the account.
Who's your rep? Who was your rep?
My rep was NBK. I don't even know who this guy, I don't remember the guy's name who texted me. I literally had one text exchange with him ever and then it was over. So I don't even remember what his name was, but the player safety team took over. And then, so then I contacted some other people at DraftKings that I knew and said, like, is there anything that can be done here? And they're like, this is totally out of our hands. Once the player safety team has an account, it's totally their call. Like it's, and I think what I've realized is like, these people probably don't play DFS. Like I think anyone who's played DFS knows it can negatively affect your mental health at times. That doesn't mean that you need to permanently be done, but it's like anybody who has a couple of really tilting slates in a row or a couple of injuries ruined, of course it affects your mental. Who would possibly be like, oh, doesn't bother me at all. I just lost 10 grand because that guy dropped the touchdown. Not affecting me in the slightest. Like, I just don't think that's realistic. But anyway, so the long story short is I am still playing on DraftKings, but I have a different handle now that I'm not sharing on social media because I think that they could potentially close it. I don't know. I didn't ask, like, am I allowed to just make a new account? Kind of assumed the answer was no. I haven't been, the human test is probably dead forever, which is ironic because a year ago, I ran it all the way up the flagpole with DraftKings. I got on a call with the CEO to ask if I could change my username because I hate the username. My wife hates it. So, because The Human Centipede is a disgusting movie. I made that username when I was like 16 years old. And so I tried to change the username and they basically just said, no, you're too big of a player. We don't allow players like above a certain volume to change their name.
They stopped allowing that a long time ago.
I tried for years to change my name and to know what's your handle.
Yeah. They did it barely like in 2015, maybe at then you might have been able to sneak a change.
Mine's Two Girls, One Cooper Cup.
Yeah, see, dude, we all made these names like so immature and now we're just stuck with them.
I was trying to switch mine to Big Dick Brick, so I was going to no, I'm kidding. So you didn't click the self-exclude button or anything like that?
No, did not click it. And here's the worst part about it. I hadn't claimed my tier 3 Onyx reward yet, which is worth like 10 to 15 grand. And they can't claim it. Like they won't let me claim it. They took all my perks away. So I was like, I probably overreacted because of that. I was like, well, at least give me my damn perks. And I was probably a little overly aggressive trying to get my perks. It's not the customer service rep's fault. You know, like I was like, this is ridiculous. You can't be serious. You're doing this to me. And so I think probably didn't help. But yeah, I definitely felt kind of screwed by them. Like, I feel like it was a pretty big overreaction, but it's funny. I had a friend texted his rep that he was excited about the All-Star break to take a few days off. And he said, oh, you're needing a break. And I had told my friend this story like months ago. And he was like, no, I'm fine. I'm doing great. I just was saying, I'm looking forward to having a little time with my family. But the guy's like, oh, okay. Thanks for clarifying. So yeah, I wouldn't say that.
I mean, I've had many reps for over a long time now. I've never gone into a conversation with them. So that is a little surprising. The oversharing you're explaining it. Cause mine's always just like, yes, no. Okay. I could do that. Well, give me more. That's basically it.
Well, I'm enjoying,
So Travis Petty, who I would call a reliable narrator, says, I've had issues with reps about saying things jokingly over text, similar to JMac. It's real. Just to like drive home the thing. So you're telling me you're playing now on a different account. And if you win the Millie Maker in a contest,
nobody will know. To clarify, I'm staking another player. I'm staking like 90% of another player, and I'm working on the lineups with him. I'm really pretty much building the lineups. But since I don't actually believe it violates the terms and conditions, because I don't have my own account. So if I build 150, give it to that player, he doesn't play any other lineups but mine, and I don't play any lineups, then I believe we're within our rights to be staking and playing in that way. But yeah, I probably won't post about it. I haven't posted about it. We actually shipped something not long ago. And it just looks like a guy with a DFI logo. I don't think anybody would think anything of it. But yeah, it just seems safer than not say anything. But a lot of our customers in the Discord know who I'm playing. They know what my lineups are. But yeah, I'm not broadcasting it on Twitter. I'm playing more on FanDuel, where my name is Justin McMahon. So you might have seen me in some FanDuel stuff. But yeah, I'm not trying to go head-to-head with Empire anymore. Not trying to play Thunderdomes anymore. It's just a lot of stress to put on yourself. And it doesn't help me with the content at all. Probably hurts the content. And this it's really supposed to be fun. And I think the big realization for me was when I tried to sell the company, I found out that in the current market and probably the foreseeable future, these companies really aren't worth much. So whatever you're doing to grow your company, you should be having fun with it. If you're not enjoying the way, and this is to anyone who's going to launch a company in this space, right? Like, I made my thread for entrepreneurs generally, but I have more thoughts for specifically this niche. And my message to people in this niche is like, you should really be enjoying what you're doing. The content that you're making, the way you're running the business, you should be enjoying it. If it's stressing you out and you're pushing yourself to do something because you think that it's going to grow your company, it's probably not going to really do that much. And at the end of the day, you're probably going to be disappointed because these companies don't sell for that much, especially if you're ready to be done. So don't burn yourself out and then try to sell your company, because that's really going to not go well.
Sorry, I got to circle back to something. Can you clarify? Are you playing and using another user as like a mule and like being lineup so you can get action down because you're self-excluded? Or are you staking a player you trust and they're playing and you're just getting like a large, large percentage of their ROI?
Well, I didn't self-exclude, but my account's been banned.
Okay, sorry.
I haven't opened a new one. I'm playing with a close friend that we've always worked on DraftKings lineups together over the years, or not really worked on together, but I've helped him, you know, I've always kind of helped him with his teams. And so, yeah, at this point I'm staking a large percentage, and really the way that the way the lineups were built for like Goff, for example, he's downloading my projections off the site, asking me, is there any players you think we should amp up or exclude? And I tell him the guys that I would be most favorable towards. And then he's crunching 150 with my projections and firing them in. So I don't know, you know, if you think that violates terms and conditions, I guess let me know. Like, I'd be willing to change part of the process. My understanding is that this is perfectly fine. But if somebody knows that that's not okay, let me know. I'm not trying to break any rules. I'm just trying to make sure that I'm able to participate in the slates and build lineups.
If that is your process, I'm not sure it does break any rules, but why would you tell him to adjust the players if they're your projections?
Because you get 100% of a guy. Like, I don't want 100% Patrick Rodgers just because he's my top point.
Right, but you said like a boost and adjust, not like an exposure cap or something.
No, when I say boost and adjust, I mean get more of this guy, get less of this guy. Like, he sends me the screenshot. Here's what your projections create. And it's like 100% of three guys. And it's just way too much.
And are you sending him money to like bankroll this play? Like, how are you guys doing the accounting for that?
Yeah, he's just going to send me a 1099 at the end of the year. So he's just playing it through. You know, we're currently up, so he's just playing it. And then at the end of the year, we'll 1099 it if wherever we're at. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a setup that other people have as well. Probably not for the same reason I do, but I think other people are staking players and doing 1099s when necessary.
Daniel Hutchings says, nerdy tenor, I believe groups playing together are fine as long as they're only accessing DK. The reason we have to ask J-Mac is because you can understand on the surface that your story would seem kind of flimsy, or that it would feel like it doesn't necessarily ring true. Just like the amount of coincidences with that, of getting like banned when you didn't mean to, and now like, and now not playing high stakes, even though you're running a content site, like why that stuff doesn't just like logically add up.
What's the coincidence other than that I accidentally got banned?
Well, the thing is most players, and it's a whole dynamic in DFS, right? Like people, the reason people subscribe to Stokastic or to ETR, all of these sites, is because they want to learn from winning players, and they want them to share their projections and the tools and right, the game yeah. theory that helps them win. And so if you're not playing and you're not beating those games, what are you actually offering the people you're selling subscriptions to?
Gotcha. Yeah. No, and I'm actually really beating the large field GPPs. So, I mean, I don't think the high stakes stuff even is relevant to the users. So, yeah, I think the edge has definitely diminished. 2020, I was crushing Thunderdomes. 2021 and 2022, I've crushed MMA. I'm probably like one of the top MMA players in high stakes. But yeah, some of the other sports, just playing Mock and BK and Yuta every day in four-mans, like there's no edge. Like you're just paying rake. I just don't think the reason that it's worth playing is if you think you're getting some marketing benefit out of it. But I just don't think that it's worth it. You know, I was luckily decided like before it's just destitution. Like, all right, I think I should give this up because I'm looking at my ROI and I'm like, I'm actually doing really well in these large field contests, but that's such a small percentage of your volume. You just can't get that much down playing large field GPPs. Like even if you maxed everything, you're not even getting 10K down. So if you're also playing a Thunderdome and a three man, now that's such a small percentage of your ROI. And so I think what I realized just analyzing like my roto tracker is like, all right, I could be doing better and be less stressed and putting in more effort into the kind of content that our users like. If I focus on these large field, small stakes, is it less exciting on a night to night basis? Yeah, but that's probably better for my health anyway. You know, like I don't think you want to be sweating 20, 30K every single night. I don't think that's necessarily good for you. So that was kind of what the conclusion that I came to. And that's why I let my rep know. So I don't think it's particularly coincidental because I let him know, hey, I've decided it's not good for my mental health to be playing in these contests. So I'm going to be ramping it down. And then I don't think it's very coincidental. I feel like it's all pretty tied together. And actually, I'd really barely played on FanDuel for the last 3 years. I'd pretty much all been playing on DraftKings. And now I'm in every FanDuel contest. So it's not like I've just completely dropped off the face of the earth. I've just switched over my name, the account name with me on it is now active on FanDuel and it's no longer active on DraftKings, which is before it was kind of flipped.
So kind of an adjacent question to this that we got a bunch of questions on this one. Do you owe any high stake players makeup or debt?
No, the funny thing is that I actually am owed a ton of money. And there's a lot of people in the space that know that to be true. I am owed a lot. But I don't talk about it. I don't feel like people are going through enough. Like if they're struggling to pay, then they're going through a tough time. And I know some of the things that they're going through and I'm not someone that wants to tear anybody down any further than they already are. So as long as they give me their word that they're not engaging in more situations that could make it worse and gambling more kind of behind my back, then I'm not going to try to tear them down at all. The interesting thing is, and if you want somebody credible that you can ask about, I actually made a large payment on behalf of somebody else this year. I covered a debt that someone else owed because I vouched for them. And it's Jeff Ma and Rufus Peabody. I hate to throw out names, but it's nothing negative towards them at all. You can ask them. That's the group that I was playing with that I covered. And look, I went about that the wrong way. I thought I shouldn't have to cover it because I had nothing to gain. Like, I brought the person into the game, but I was like, well, if he won, I get nothing. And if he loses and doesn't pay, then now I'm on the hook. That feels like a pretty asymmetrical situation. But I was told by the group that I'm wrong. Consensus is I'm wrong. I hard vouched on accident, but I hard vouched and I have to pay. So I did. So I covered it. And you know, I feel like I learned from the situation. I would never vouch for anybody. And that's my another piece of advice. If you're a young gambler or someone new to the space, do not vouch for somebody. There is nothing you could gain, and you could end up having your reputation on the hook, and you've got to send a huge payment to cover somebody else's debt. And so, I get why. Here's why I think that's floating around. I owed Chop a couple grand from the end of college football season, and we'd already signed our LOI and we'd started the due diligence process on this deal. And I usually send those payments in and out of an account that's tied to DFI. So my account.
And sorry, just to clarify, were you guys playing like high stakes, like off-site? Yeah. Gotcha.
I wouldn't call it high stakes, but off-book head-to-heads for like a
college football?
College football, yeah. So credit to Chop, got the better of me second half of the season. And I can't remember the amount. I want to say like $8,000. So I said, hey, my accountant suggested that let's not move money in or out now that we've already sent over our current balance sheets and books. I'll get you in a week or two when the due diligence ends. And, you know, I think he was fine with it. I didn't think anything of it. But that due diligence process did not ever end. It dragged out for 2.5 months until they basically backed out of the deal. And I'm not blaming them. They had their reasons. A major disruption happened that you guys know very well. A major disruption happened in that company that forced them to prioritize other things and kind of put us on the back burner. And then I just really didn't like... I didn't know what to do because kind of was like, well, I want to listen to the people that are advising us on the deal. They're saying like, let's try to keep everything just the way it is. And eventually I did send it to him because I was like, all right, screw this. I took too long. Sorry about that. And I think that apparently he told me that he had other people in the group that were like backing his play. So it wasn't just him. And so he told all those people that I'm delaying paying. And so I think that's what happened. And I did go about that wrong. Like, I can admit that. Like, I should have just told the accountant like, hey, is it really that important? I didn't press him. I just said, all right, I'll listen to you. A lot of stuff going on, and I didn't really think through that one. And if I had, I would have probably realized in hindsight, I should have just sent it right away. But to me, it was kind of a insignificant amount to make a big fuss about, but I understand why it could trigger people saying that I'm not paying on time. So well, I do apologize for that.
The insignificant amount can also be triggering on the other side because it's like, dude, just
right. Send it. No, you're a winning player. And look, I understand. I totally get it. After that happened, I sent a much bigger payment to Jeff and the guys to cover someone else. So hopefully that in some ways kind of adjudicates the claims that I would, that I couldn't pay. But anyway.
So you have no other college football debts?
No.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it was just that one thing. And I think it just keeps circulating around. And I don't think those guys are putting in any effort to clarify it, which is fine. They don't owe that to me. But I believe that's where it's coming from. No one ever talks to me about it, you know? So that's just kind of my guess. But
One other thing that came up recently that I wanted to ask you about, as someone who likes to scroll on TikTok, I see a decent amount of Josh Richards, probably one of the biggest TikTok stars out there. Maybe this audience's demographic doesn't know Josh Richards, but he's absolutely fucking massive. I want to know, how did you get Josh Richards to vouch for your new site on Twitter to his 2 million followers?
It's unfortunate that he did, in a sense, because... So I shared that my tweet on my Instagram, and he and I have been pretty good friends for a couple of years, but he really doesn't use Twitter at all. I don't think he's ever shouted me out on the platform. But I posted a screenshot of this tweet on my Instagram and said, just launched a new company, really excited about it. So he saw that and thought, I'll go vouch for him. Cause I text him my picks almost every day. He uses the DFI app or used to. And he's been playing for a long time, and he's had a good couple of years from playing my picks. And so he is appreciative of it and wanted to help. I don't think he realized that it ended up doing more damage because he doesn't follow me on the platform. So of course it looks like I bought this ad. But no, we're pretty good friends. I could pull up pictures on my phone and show pictures of us doing stuff. I don't really ever post these pictures with him because I don't want to look like I'm trying to flex that I'm friends with a 22-year-old TikToker. But I actually think he's a really cool guy. I like him a lot. I enjoy hanging out with him. But yeah, this is exactly the opposite of what I want, right? Like, this is his job, you know? Like, I'm not going to knock somebody. Like, they probably paid him $1 million to do that. Like, I'm not going to knock somebody for doing their job. Like, I respect what he's built for himself. He's actually a really sharp guy. He plays it perfectly. He's built a really big brand for himself. You know, he knows his space, and I don't really quite, I value him based on my interactions that I have with him. I don't really care what people say about him or what his reputation is.
It's less about, I think the, when we mentioned like the words coincidence, because you also, I've roasted you over the years. You were used to do this like DM marketing campaign. Dude, with DM, where it's like robotic DMs and stuff like that. So like in the totality of all of this stuff, it looks like slimy fucking marketing. And like Josh Richards, who doesn't follow you, who never talks about playing DFS anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you look him up,
it's of a paid ad.
Right. No, if you want to actually dig into it, you can see on Instagram, like that he follows me and that I could show you posts that we have together. And I think we probably have over 10,000 texts. I don't know if there's a way to show that, but yeah, it's not, I get how it looks. I do get it. And I do want to address that, the DM thing. That was something that, you know, if you own a company in the space, you get contacted all the time. People saying, can I come on and do social media management? I want to grow your audience. Can I do work for you with social media stuff? And so I had someone reach out and say, I did this great campaign with another company where we DM'd all their followers, gave them a free trial, and it converted a ton of people. Can I do that campaign with your company totally for free? I'll DM all your clients and you'll just give me like a small percentage of whatever it generates. And I didn't think through what the negative of that would be. I thought, yeah, that seems like a pretty good idea. I wrote the DM, so I'll take ownership of that. I wrote it. If you hated it, I did write it. But I was trying to make it like work for every person. What I didn't realize is that, yeah, that's going to, of course, go to all these people in the industry that I know. So then it's going to seem really impersonal that I'm just like blast DMing.
This is the copy. Like, you know, you and I had exchanged like a couple DMs, and then I get this. We've been making a lot of improvements to DFI app since we released it. This may seem odd, but negative feedback is really my favorite because then we can make the app even better. So if you could think of anything to improve it, it would mean a lot to me. Was this, right. This was like a robo thing that went out to anyone you followed?
The guy said, I'm just going to pick some of your followers to try it with. And he DM'd every single person that followed me. So everyone got this DM in like a 3-day span. And it was like right before the holidays too. So then all of a sudden I'm just getting so many people like, dude, fuck that DM. That's so lame. And I'm just like, well, it's too late. It already went out to every single person. So what am I supposed to do? You want me to send another DM? Be like, hey, sorry, that was a bad idea. So I agree. I personally, like if someone else sent me that DM, I would flame them. Like, I agree that it was dumb. So like,
you blame it on the intern.
No, I mean, it was my call. Look, like I agreed. I went along with it. I helped write it. Like I can only take the blame for that. I accept full responsibility. It was just a mistake. And I would never recommend to any business owner to like cold contact all of your customers. Like people send out like email campaigns all the time. And in my mind, I was thinking this is very similar. Like, this is like sending a blast email to your whole list, asking for feedback on your app. But it just did not come across that way. And I see why. Like when I read it now from the perspective of like Pete, like if Pete sent me that, it just doesn't feel the same at all as getting like an email asking for app feedback. So that was a mistake. And I apologize to everybody who got that DM.
I wouldn't like from like a business perspective, like doing a lot of these things, I think are totally fine in my opinion. And like, you're clearly trying to make money and grow a company. So like, I wouldn't apologize for some of those, but like just full blanket. Have you ever paid anyone like an influencer or someone to like your posts or follow you for followers?
Anything like that? It's not worth it. Like I was trying to explain that in the comments. Some guys were like speculating, how much do you think this ad from Josh costs? And they set the over under at $5,000, and almost every single person was guessing over. People were guessing $20,000, $30,000. I'm like, guys, this isn't worth hardly anything. Like, I picked up about 50 followers from that, and no new customers. Like, no one just snapped by something because an influencer says it's a good thing. Like, maybe 5 years ago that was true, but today influencers sharing some their friend's company doesn't really do anything. Like, it's not worth paying for that at all. So luckily
I think two things can be true. I do agree with you too. Like, I would be shocked if that converted a single
sub. I didn't get anything. He was just doing it to be nice.
But I will also say Josh Richards can command 200, 300,000, upwards of $500,000 for a single TikTok advertisement post with like his following. So like, yeah. I understand why people would be like, this looks like an ad. It feels like an ad. Josh Richardson can legit command $500,000 for a single TikTok.
Right.
But I also agree with you that I guarantee this did nothing for either
of them. Anything. Yeah. But that's why I was like, I wish he didn't do it. Like, in all honesty, I was like, it was nice, like super appreciated, but like, yeah, it just ended up drawing a bunch of ire towards me that I was like, I don't really deserve this. And neither does he. And that's the thing, is it caused all these people to post videos of him when he was 13 doing some flamboyant video. And it's like, dude, this is so uncalled for. Like, he's just trying to be a nice friend and now he's being roasted.
Is Josh Richards a new sub at Really Good Picks?
Yeah, I mean, I give him free access wherever, you know, like I'll give it to my close friends. They all have access to my content.
Yeah, I still have no idea who this person is, Pete. I'm such a boomer here, but
dude, I didn't know. I never heard of him when he reached out to me. He reached out to me a few years ago, and he's like, "I'd like to learn about sports betting. Can you help me out?" I had no idea who he was, but I was like, "This guy has millions of followers. I'll
sounds like you were helping an underage person, by the way, who's not.
No, he's Canadian. You can gamble at 18 in Canada.
Oh, there you go.
Brian, is there anything, I think like looking through my notes and some of the DMs and the comments we got, I feel like we hit some of the main things we wanted to get to. Were there any other loose ends that you had here?
I don't think we have enough time really. Just the general, like, I don't think we really fully got, it's hard to do this anyways though. It's like, it's kind of the tout hate, people hate touts. And so I don't really agree with that, but then it's like, well, then you have to kind of prove who you are. And it's like hard to prove. Leading into like my last question would be, it's like, okay, then how are you, how do we know your projections are good? How are your projections better than Rufus Peabody's? So, you know, and at PGA, how are your projections better than the Osmo team or the ETR staff?
Yeah.
Or, you know, those are pretty tough at this point, the efficient DFS market that we live in. It's pretty hard to like, do you have any stats experience? Like, are you a database guy and we never knew or anything like that?
Yeah. So I've been working with a programmer for like the last 7 years on my projections, but I've just always kept them to myself. And I always made the content based on them, but I felt like I never wanted to give projections out because I thought everybody would just do. And when Osmo released his projections, I thought all his customers are just going to be duping each other and it's going to be a terrible experience. And I was wrong. That didn't seem to happen. So then I started working on getting them front facing so that I could publish them. And I probably could have published them a little while ago, but I didn't want to launch them on DFI because I couldn't even control the tech on that platform. So I think my projections are really good. I'm only doing 6 sports and I'm not doing a couple of sports that I know I'm going to lose customers for not doing. I'm not doing hockey. I'm not doing NASCAR. I'm not doing WNBA. I'm just not good enough at those sports. My projections don't
compare. Those are the ones you probably should do if you're not good enough, because the other ones are super efficient. So like, I don't do my own anymore. I was doing my own long ago, you know? And so I don't do my own for NFL or MLB.
Oh, but I'm saying I can't, when I backtest what I built for those, it's just not good enough. Like, it doesn't beat the other ones. Like, you know, I find that when I try to backtest my projections against Stevie and NASCAR, like mine are worse. But mine backtest well in the other sports. And I would encourage someone to try them. I have a friend that plays really high stakes head to heads. Posts on both sites. He's weighting my projections the highest in his model already. He said mine are testing really well. I've been working on them for a long time and testing them. So I would just encourage, just download them and run them against another set and see which ones do better. And that would be the way to test them. And yeah,
so you do this with a programmer guy and you tell him your gut instincts and then he goes and does the legwork.
No, I mean, I'm telling him, here are all the stats that I want in it. Here's all the, you know, here are the sharpest books I want those, their player props. I want that as a weight. I want the advanced,
right, but that's not how stats, that's not how statistics works, right? Like, so like if I say like batting average matters, I want that in the model. Like you tell me that that's what you want. I go, well, okay, well,
take,
how
you can end up with like, you can make a bunch of like individual projections. So like you can take a, well, I don't want to go too deep into it, but you can take a bunch of individual projections and then blend them at certain weights. So you can create projections, like numbers that you want as the value, and then blend them together. Like, do you have a model you're saying, or you do not?
Yeah. I've made thousands of models.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah. So,
but they're not good enough to beat Rufus, and they're not good enough to beat a team of eight guys now at ETR and stuff like that. They're just not.
I know. I hear you. I would personally be using mine. But look, at the end of the day, also, I don't just blind crunch with projections. I'm typically doing qualitative analysis as well, and trying to figure out who I think is going to be higher owned than even than my projections might even say, kind of trying to scour the industry. And so I think it's a lot about getting leverage more so than, are you 1 point higher or lower on this guy? I think it really comes down also to like understanding the leverage and the way the slate's going to play out.
Sure. I'm fine with that. But yeah. Like, just sorry, Pete, but like do you take in other sites' projections into your programming or into your projections at all, or is it just
there's probably 100 factors that are going into some of these, like a sport like baseball with so many, or like basketball with so many factors. There's a ton of things going into it. And look, I'm not going to go into like, this factor has a lot of weight for us compared. Like, this is a factor we've identified as maybe being underweighted in Rufus or
I'm not telling you to give any secrets. I'm just saying, generally speaking, I think what happens with a lot of smaller sites is they just copy the big boys and then aggregate them and then put a little variance in there.
No, that's there's definitely a different process than just simply like you know, the site, the Daily Average, like that's just kind of like just this, it's a straight blend. There's a lot more to it than that. But the thing that definitely gets factored in, I am pulling other sites for our ownership. I think it's irresponsible not to. I think it really matters. If Rubis has a guy that I didn't think was a good play, so I originally was going to project him kind of low owned, if that's his number one play, that definitely impacts ownership. So you have to make an adjustment to your ownership projections, or else they're just going to be way off. So yeah, I am pulling for, and I think personally that's okay. You know, I don't know if other people would disagree that you can't look at other sites for your projections, but I think it's really relevant for the ownership to factor in how other sites are projecting players, at least the ones that move the needle. You know, I think we all know there's a couple of them that have enough subscribers that are moving the needle. So if they're really touting a guy hard, you have to adjust or you're just going to be wrong.
Yeah, I do think like the people can kind of decide for themselves. I did find a photo of one of your models here, and I just wanted to pull it back up on the screen.
That's probably our best model.
Yeah. Great model. Anything else, Brian, here before we power down?
No, we're out of time.
Brian, can I add one closing comment?
Sure.
You mentioned the tout thing, and people ask me all the time, like, why tout if you can just win? And I think one of the interesting things that people say is there's a lot of hard legwork that goes into really winning as a sports bettor, and that's honorable, and touting is dishonorable. But the hard legwork usually involves multi-accounting and a syndicate where you have hundreds of logins across all these different sports books, and you can place bets all at the same time so that you don't move the odds too much or get limited. To me, that's also kind of questionably ethical, even more so than touting. I've never understood. I would love it if you guys have an opinion. I've never understood why that's considered like the ethical, honorable way to win and make money in this market, is to cheat the sportsbook's account policies when they're trying to limit the sharp players, but you're going to cheat it by multi-accounting. Like, fine, I'm not shaming you, but why is that considered the ethical
thing? I don't know if you should be tisking multi-accounting right now, J-Mac.
Fair. No, look, I agree. I will answer that. Like, I'm not trying to like bash it. I just can't believe that that's considered like the really like honorable high horse approach, but touting is considered so bad when you're actually making a lot of people's experience better. I mean, there's hundreds of comments on my original post, people saying how much they love the content I make, how much fun it is to be in the community with me. So if people are having so much fun in the community, like why are we shitting on that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with touting. My personal perspective, unless there's something extra going on to the touting layer, that maybe like Vegas Dave type of people are doing or something. But if you're just putting your picks out there,
you're just outright lying, that's different.
Insane. It's $15, whatever, if you want them. Here you go. I don't care, honestly. I think a lot of it's good for the games, but I will make a case that the multi-counting is morally like fair, I think, because if you're doing on regulated books, especially in America, these companies lobby. I was there. I worked at the Capitol for many years, and they fuck us over. And they basically use the state for their own benefit. So like, I know Jason Robbins put out a tweet the other day. He's like, we encourage competition. It's like, yeah, sure. Then lobby to get rid of all the licensing fees in all these states so that small little companies can get through and make the regulations even less. They want high regulations, and they're the ones in like, you know, they spend tons of money on lobbying. You can look up the numbers and then once they get this sort of, you know, siphoned off market, then they can start any winning sports better. Most of the people, you know, in our circle, a lot of us have been limited.
Right.
They could get away with it where they wouldn't be able to get away with it. Like in the caveman days, 2003 sports betting was awesome. You know, net teller and shit like that. All the old school guys will know what I'm talking about. Yeah, so I think like it's fair game. Like if you're going to use the state, then fuck you. That's my personal opinion. So like, but I would say if you don't have that perspective, I can understand where multi-accounting is not that moral of a thing.
It's not that I'm really opposed to it. I'm just like, I'm glad that was a good answer. I'm glad I asked. Thank you for that context because that's what I was missing.
One kind of slightly off topic as we power down here. Are you on team Run Pure Big T or on team Hoop Ship It Nation?
Good question.
People need to know.
I cannot answer that. Sorry.
Whoa.
That's where you draw the line at talking.
I'll talk about myself all you want, but I'm not here to tell anybody else.
Well, let me say this as we're to the last thing, this will only take a second. A lot of people asked like questions about your family and stuff like that. And you asked us respectfully not to, and we had no interest in it anyways, but I just know we're going to get a lot of people on Twitter saying, why didn't you ask him about this? Ask him about that. And ask him about this. So just for the people who were like hounding on us.
Yeah.
Like,
I just don't think we're not interested. It's fair to them to drag them in. You know, this is my endeavor, my career, and they have absolutely no involvement at all. So it's just not fair to make them,
I think that's
stuff about themselves.
I agree.
Stuff about themselves.
The other thing I did want to get, so you do have your new site, reallygoodpicks.com. I can confirm you are no longer investing in any tech team whatsoever after visiting the site. Is there anything else you want to tell people about the site before we
it's simple, it's clean. Yeah, it's not super high tech, but the projections are good and the content is good. I mean, the write-ups are really solid and the Discord has been a lot of fun. We're having a good time. If you're a player that wants to have fun, use projections, use content, have a good time, join us, and I look forward to seeing you in there.
I will actually say, of all the stuff, J-Mac, I actually think it's a good name vein of like the Washington Commanders, where it's like winkingly ironic. So congratulations on the name. I actually think it is good.
Thank you. It makes me laugh when, like, even when you pulled up the site, it made me chuckle. Like, I enjoy the name. I think it's amusingly bad, and that was like, it's hard to come up with a name. So once I came up with one that was making me laugh, I was like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah. I don't think people made too big of a deal out of it. And I'll just say another thing too, with just because I can't make the best projections in the industry doesn't mean you can't, Justin. I was just giving my perspective.
No, that's fair, Rick. And look, like, test mine against other people's. And another thing also is like, if everybody is using Rufus's, then there's also an argument to be made that like, even if you think mine are slightly worse, it's better to be unique than to be tailing the same projections as everybody else. So there's kind of another argument there. I'm not the one making it, but I've heard people say that like the best thing you can do is find unique projections.
That logic doesn't work for me.
But I can make, I've never made projections in my life. I can make some people some damn good unique projections if they want to.
You
want to
be way off, but you want to be you want to be like a point or two off. Travis in the comments wants to have some fun. Join us, Trav.
Yes, Travis will be becoming a really good pick sub here any moment. Appreciate everyone in the chat. Appreciate J-Mac. Thanks for reaching out, coming on here. If you too are going through a battle for ownership of your DFS site, you can reach out to Brian and I. And we will host you and tell your voice. And you know what? In the same way, everyone wanted us to extend an invite to Big T to come on after the hoop stuff. J-Mac, if your tech people want to come on here and tell their side of the story, we will continue to be an equal opportunity platform.
Good. Maybe not the whole hour.
I'm sure they will laugh when they hear this because there's no way they will do it. But yeah, good.
All right, guys, if this is your first time watching Lulz for some reason, we are here every Thursday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. You probably, if you're just here for the drama, then you don't care about Brian and I doing basketball stuff, but you could go back in the archives and watch our hoop run Pierre Sports saga that I'm now even more intrigued about because J-Mac won't tell us what side he's on. Thank you guys again for Brian. I'm Pete. We'll see you guys later. Peace.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.